Hey everyone, Happy New Year. Welcome to another episode of the AlbumReview.net podcast. I'm Greg Potters. Thanks to all you listeners out there for your interaction and feedback. Your feedback is much appreciated and it helps me to always improve. 2021 was a great year for the AlbumReview.net website and podcast. In 2021, I released 25 new podcast episodes and reviews ranging from album reviews for Radiohead, Guns N' Roses, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, John Coltrane, Faith No More, Huey Lewis and the News, and more, and also shared interviews with musicians such as Ivan Bodley, Danny Horowitz, Jason Myrick, and authors such as Kyle Hegarty and Brian O'Connor, not to mention many, many more. You can find all of their books, all of their albums, and info on the website. Now, when I look back, I am amazed at how far this has come. Wanted to use this intro part as a quick 2021 reflection before I get into the album I'm going to be reviewing today. In April 2016, I began doing research and planting the seed for what later would become this project. I can remember sitting outside on a bench during lunch at my corporate day job, just planning away. And launching AlbumReview.net in April 2020, I set out to write passionate, heartfelt albums, giving you, the listener, my personal thoughts on what each album meant to me. My intention was, and still is, to get you motivated to either agree, totally disagree, or hear enough so that maybe you might want to learn more. When I launched the podcast as part of the website in late 2020, I first wanted to present quick audio blurbs of my written reviews for those of you on the go. But very soon, this turned into interviewing people all over the world, from Singapore to New Zealand to Canada and the US, diving deep into what makes each of my guests passionate about music. I can say I'm thankful to have made many new friends along the way, for sure. Yeah, that's right. 2022 is going to be a great year. I cannot wait to continue growing this podcast. So on today's episode, I'm joined by an old friend, musician and film editor, Zach Stoff. Zach joined me several months back for my Frank Zappa Hot Rats album review, and he's here again with me today to talk about what he and I deem as possibly our favorite band in the world, Rush. That's right, Zach and I are going to be reviewing Rush's 1978 classic album, Hemispheres. Now, just to remind you all, you can read my album reviews and listen to my podcast episodes by going to albumreview.net. These episodes can be heard wherever podcasts are available. And in addition to this, you can read well over 30 written reviews at albumreview.net and pick up some merchandise from your favorite bands. I've got t-shirts, albums, sound systems, and as I mentioned before, the bookstore. So I've mentioned this in previous podcasts. Want to learn more about your favorite musician or band that you just can't find on the internet? I don't know about you, but I get exhausted searching on the internet and I waste so much time. So I wanted to build this bookstore for you guys at albumreview.net. So if you go there and click on the store tab, you can grab copies of different biographies and autobiographies from your favorite artists such as Eric Clapton, Motley Crue, Faith No More, Pink Floyd. I've got The Story of Spotify, Tom Petty, Metallica, Eddie Van Halen, as well as books from previous authors that I've interviewed on the show. Okay, are you a right brain person or a left brain person? I want you to ponder that for a second. And if you don't know, listen to Zach and my review, which includes song clips from the album, and you'll definitely be able to find the answer to this question after this. So I want to invite you to strap in, lock all the doors, put the kids to bed, and let's go looking for dinner. Here is our review of Rush's 1978 classic album, Hemispheres. Joining me today for this episode of the AlbumReview.net podcast is Zach Stoff.
Zach is a music enthusiast, film editing instructor, and most importantly, my oldest and best friend. To learn more about Zach, go to zachstoff.com. That's ZACKSTOFF.com. And check out episode 6 of the albumreview.net podcast, where you learn more about Zach and his background while we both review Frank Zappa's Hot Rats album. But for today, you guys, Zach and I break out the ladder, pull down the cord to the attic, climb up, go to the very back wall of the attic. We open the toy chest and pull out what may be the album that bonded Zach and I in music forever. So recorded in 1978 at Rockfield Studios in Rockfield, Monmouthshire, Wales, Rush once again chose this beautiful spot to record their album Hemispheres. So Zach, thanks so much for joining me today, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is going to be so much fun. I'm so excited.
I can't wait for this. I've been like a kid in a candy store, man. So the reason why Zach and I chose to review this album over other Rush albums, because there are 19 of them, you know, was because we felt that this record was likely the most difficult for the band to play and record. We feel Rush is most likely the best technically skilled rock band of all time. And I want to stay calm, Zach, during this review, because I feel like this is a no-brainer. No-brainer! I hope this review is going to launch future debates over what the best Rush album is and who the best technically skilled rock band is, because I just want to tell you guys, it's Rush, case closed. I think I might be revealing a little more than planned in this episode, Zach. I've been sort of hiding the fact that I'm an incredibly diehard Rush fan to the audience. And as much as I want to come off as objective in these reviews, I think it's more for people to hear my passion and your passion. So, Zach, when was the first time, because I'm guessing it was before me, when was the first time do you remember hearing Hemispheres?
Well, it was for sure being the younger brother of my older musician brother, who I would very frequently hear bleeding out of his bedroom, Rush music, and him, you know, learning how to play these songs on guitar, which seems to be very similar to, you know, the last podcast we did where, you know, we talked about Zappa. And I think I'm fortunate to have been passed down this music from having an older brother who introduced me to it. So certainly I credit him for sure. You know, listening and discovering all these Rush mixes, tapes, you know, this is back in the world of mixtapes, right? Where you discover a mixtape that would just take over your life and you know, you knew it front to back, you know, all the songs and the choices of songs and the graphics and how it was written and all that stuff. So it was certainly through discovering one or more mixtapes that he created that I just locked onto, and learning how to play the bass and you know, get into music. A very simple thing came to me when I listened to this album, and that was, this is the reason why I started playing music. I started listening to these songs, and Geddy Lee had a Rickenbacker. I bought a Rickenbacker. You know, Geddy Lee started playing a Steinberger bass, you know, in the 80s. I wanted a Steinberger bass.
Cut off the top of your bass.
I mean, I wanted to be Geddy Lee, like millions of aspiring bass players out there. I absolutely killed myself over learning every single note and every lick to all of these songs. And it just took over my entire musical world and inspired me to play bass. And I can honestly say I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't be the person I am today, or even be where I am today, if I had not been influenced so much by Rush and by Geddy Lee. And as I listen to this album, one of the things that hits me is if you get 3 or 4 minutes into this album and you're like, yeah, it's okay, and not really into it, you don't have to listen to Rush ever again. This is this is the best that this band has to offer in this album. And it hits you immediately. They just hit you over the head with it. It's just the best they have to offer in every facet of these three amazing, incredible individuals, you know, and, you know, it gets emotional. I'm sure we're talking about it with the passing of Neil Peart and, you know, because this is like so many of his, of their albums, this is his masterpiece. These are his words. Yeah. This is his conception of the world and how he created these incredible fantasies. But yeah, overall, my general impressions were just taking me back to getting into music for the first time and just realizing what three people can create. It's just incredible.
See, you guys, this is precisely the reason I had Zach on. Zach was the one that introduced me to the band, and it, you know, it changed my musical life and really my life forever. So we're going to get into the album. We're going to dig super, super deep. This is a real special one for us. And again, like I was saying earlier, I've been holding off on doing a Rush album just because I'm a bit of a fanboy here, but I'm going to try to look at it from a perspective of somebody that likes this type of music, but maybe hasn't heard Rush a lot. Or perhaps for someone who is a musician who appreciates strong musicianship and strong technical instrumentation. I can't think of a better introduction to an album review than what Zach just gave. So Rush entered the studio it was the summer of 1978 for the first time in their recording history without any songs prepared or really any predetermined ideas for even writing them. This time they went in cold. And so the goal was to discover their chemistry organically this time and write while they record. And well, this posed as probably the greatest recording challenge of their career, like Zach had alluded to earlier. This is exactly why we chose Zach and I to, you know, talk about this album first. So Terry Brown would return for a second time after producing A Farewell to Kings along with Rush. The band figured that they would feel comfortable with him again. So, but we're going to come back over and over to the complexity of the arrangements on this album. So due to that complexity on Hemispheres, recording this album would take the longest amount of time to date. After taking only 4 weeks to record A Farewell to Kings and 5 weeks to record their prior masterpiece, 2112, Hemispheres took 4 months for them to record. Now, that might not sound like a long time now today in 2021. Some bands take like up to a year. 4 months for them was a really long time. And the band would take just one day off during that entire 4 months, which is just amazing. So after the 4 month recording period, the band was ready for a break before getting back on the road. And like many touring acts in the 1970s, Rush was essentially touring, you know, nonstop, almost like tour, record, tour, record, tour, record, rinse, repeat, for about 3 decades before Neil Peart and the band, they took a long break, Zach. I think it was in 1997 when, unfortunately, Neil faced tragedy when his daughter died in a car accident. And then only a few months later, his common law wife, Jackie, passed away from cancer. I remember you and I talking about that back then, just wondering if they would ever tour again. And they even admitted in interviews that they weren't sure. Geddy and Alex were like, we weren't sure if we were ever going to play again. After Neil lost his daughter and his wife in the same year, he said in an interview that he lived the rest of his life with a sense of fatalism. So I think for Zach and I, growing up in the 80s, we became used to seeing albums with 10 or 12 tracks on them, many times having a name that included the word baby or with a picture of a poofy haired dude or a girl in a bikini. But when we saw the covers of Rush albums, they were different, right? They were real different, right, Zach? Like these guys were not out to get fans. They were not out to become popular. Just look at a Rush album cover. Turn it over. Look at the back. Look at what what they were wearing, you know? And for this review, I want to talk about it. Look at the freaking names of the songs, okay?
Yeah.
The album cover for Hemispheres depicts, all right, I'm going to have to take a deep breath, okay? All right, I'm getting a little too excited here. This was going to happen. So the album cover for Hemispheres, if you're listening to this right now, feel free to pull it up on your phone. It depicts a man with no clothing, mind you, dancing on top of a brain, while on the other side of the brain is a sharply dressed man wearing a suit, holding a cane, standing, looking rather unimpressed with the naked guy. And the brain in this picture, by the way, was a picture of an actual brain. I found out that the artist who created the album cover, Hugh Syme, snapped when he visited the Department of Anatomy at the Toronto School of Medicine. Pretty cool, man. It's not just a drawing. The artwork is representative of the two, kind of the two conflicting sides of the brain, the right and the left. And the right side of the brain is synonymous with, as you guys probably know, imagination, feelings, visualization, rhythm, intuition, holistic thinking, and the arts, while the left side is more synonymous with things like linear thinking, mathematics, facts, and logic. The naked guy is clearly on the right side of the brain, while the guy standing in the suit, I think, represents the left. Quite genius and unique when it comes to what rock bands were putting on the cover of their albums in the 1970s, right? So the whole album is themed like this. It's, you know, what Neil said was, it's really a representation of a fight against oneself and our two sides, that right brain and that left brain.
Hence the name of the album, you know, Hemispheres, you know, two sides of a sphere connecting into one. The end of Cygnus talking about how to create a perfect sphere. So many different connotations there that I think people are going to be discovering with years going forward with Neil Peart's lyrics. And so many incredible concepts throughout all of Rush's lyrics. And this one is clearly a great example of that, with all of the parts of the songs with different names and different chapters. I think great albums are almost like great books, even, you know, in this is an example. I mean, this could be a book. You could take Hemispheres, you could take so many of Rush's albums, you know, strip it down. You can read the lyrics and you're reading a novel. You're reading a book of Neil Peart's vision of humanity. And then you add on top of that, the fact that he was just the most insane drummer that we've probably ever seen in modern music, and just an incredible human being. Also, it's worth saying them recording this in England, it's worth crediting the tradition of English music, you know, specifically like progressive rock music, like the Trailblazers in a way of this in the 60s and 70s, being Genesis, Pink Floyd, King Crimson. And I think for sure when they decided to leave Toronto and record Farewell to Kings and Hemispheres, they were for sure making a decision to kind of take their music up to another level, of production, first of all, in terms of the sound and the facilities and the resources they had there, but also all of the influences of recording in English countryside and just all of that bleeding into their music. So it was a huge move for them to do this, to go to England and record these albums, and really took their whole band and recordings up to like a whole nother level.
Yeah, for sure. If you own the record, the CD or the cassette, the first side of Hemispheres, it's just one song. I love it. What's the best way to scare off a pop hungry music fan than, you know, they're scrolling through albums at the record store? Write a song called Cygnus X1 Book 2 Hemispheres, okay? Not only that, but add another piece into that where you break that song into parts, just like Zach said, and give them names like Apollo, Bringer of Wisdom, and Dionysus, Bringer of Love. Yeah, Dionysus, baby.
Yeah.
This is a surefire way to scare off the casual fans. And so my apologies again if I'm if I'm coming off as holier than thou in this review, it's not my intention per se. I guess I just needed one review where I put it all out on the table and communicate how I cannot find one other band that technically keeps the beat, as Jack Black would say, to the atom.
One thing I want to say here is with relation just to the musicianship and the sound of this album, the thing that Rush really created and made a unique feature of their music is so apparent a few minutes into this. And just this, you know, speaking about this, you know, from a musician standpoint, it's the Rush signature of Geddy Lee's bass line, which is just this amazing traveling bass line that doesn't miss any opportunities for these incredible little licks and double hits. On top of that, Neil Peart's incredible drumming, which just is keeping the beat, but also doing the same kind of fills, and Alex's solo. So you have a double solo on top of Neil Peart. A great example of this is like a few minutes into The Trees, you know, where you have Geddy's bass line going do 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 do. That sound comes across so clearly here. And I think for Rush fans and for musicians, when they hear that for the first time, they fall in love with that. They just fall in love with that. And you wait for that to happen in any of these songs. There's just so many amazing hits and time signatures and moments and fills. And it's just, everything's in there in this album. And it just, it blew me away coming back to it, and just reminded me why I love this band so much. And like you said, four songs, you know, there's four songs in this album, Cygnus being just the one song on the first side. You know, if we're still sort of talking about this in sides, but you know, just the way that this, I mean, if you're going to put four songs on an album, why not have it bookended with these two incredible multi-chaptered instrumental songs. Right. And then in between you have these other two songs that just hit you over the head. And the second song coming out of nowhere with French in it, talking about the more you change, the more you stay the same. These crazy concepts with French harking back to their French Canadian from Toronto. And it's almost like a rock song clears the slate and just sort of refreshes you. And then boom. Talking about sort of all the great parts and elements of these amazing musicians being at their peak at this particular time, that also includes Geddy's voice. I mean, his voice is incredible in this album, and it hits you in the first couple minutes. I mean, he's not just hitting these high notes, but he's doing that falsetto. He's holding the notes. He's you know, it getting the most out of them. And it's Geddy at his best. It's just incredible.
I actually had a chance to meet Geddy two summers ago, about 6 months before Neil passed away. And I told Zach this story, but I waited in line for 3 hours outside a bookstore. Yes, there are actually still bookstores around. And the whole time I had written down on my phone, I had typed on my phone what I was going to say. And when I got up to him, I got so nervous, and I don't know why I regret this, but I didn't want to fanboy out. So I just held out my fist bumped him. This was pre-COVID, so we weren't necessarily too concerned about germs yet, but I thought to myself, maybe Geddy doesn't want to shake 800 people's hands. But I just fist bumped him and I just said, hey, I've been listening to you my whole life and I love your music, man. And he just kind of looked at me and said, thanks. And I was you know, super excited. But then later when I walked out, I was like, man, I should have poured my heart out. But anyway, The Trees, which is the next song, it was included as a single from this record along with Circumstances. And it was written about the conflict between the maple trees and the oak trees.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
Again, this harkens to, you know, these sort of conflicts that we're going to be dealing with that Neil Peart has coded into all of these lyrics, you know, which is, you know, the eternal conflict of man and nature and how we appreciate nature and you know, is there ever a time when this is not relevant? You know, right. I played this song for my two boys the other day, you know, ages 5 and 7, you know, and I'm like to tell them, you know, this is a song about these trees, you know, battling against each other. And they're like, whoa, this is cool. You know,
that's awesome. I got a dad, this is boring. Please turn this off.
I mean, you know, they got a few minutes into it and then they're like, okay. You know.
There was an interview with Neil in an April, I think it was April, May, 1980, that issue of the magazine Modern Drummer that I found, where he was asked if there was a message in the lyrics to this song. And Neil said, no, it was just a flash. I was working on an entirely different thing when I saw, I'm quoting Neil here, I was working on an entirely different thing when I saw a cartoon picture of these trees carrying on like fools. And I thought, what if trees acted like people? So I saw it as a cartoon, really, and I wrote it that way. And I think that's the image that it conjures up to a listener or a reader, a very simple statement, end quote. So Neil claims that the lyrics have no deep meaning. Well, I think I read that many fans refute the claim. As you read the lyrics, they do sound like a depiction of a political battle written in the world of just trees. So the next song, La Via Strangiato. Okay, actually, Zach, I wanted to use this as an opportunity. Let's settle this. Is it La Villa or is it La Via?
I think the correct pronunciation in Italian is La Villa.
I think you're right, man. I think you and I, we called it La Via, and I thought we were being smart, right? You know, we both took Spanish. La Villa Strangiato means either weird city or the strange house in Italian. I was listening to an interview with Alex Lifeson that was recorded back in 1978. The Spanish guitar was used on this album's closing track, the Tour de Force, La Villa Strangiato, arguably, Zach, the finest instrumental the band ever recorded. I shouldn't even say arguably, it was. The piece is based on, this is kind of cool, dreams that Alex had been having, and he would tell the band about them. And the 9-minute instrumental subtitled An Exercise in Self-Indulgence, which is a section of this song, it was written while they were touring. And apparently Getty and Neil joked that this was a description of what they went through every time Alex would tell them about his dreams every morning. The band spent more time working on this one song than the entire Fly By Night album that was released in 1975. That is crazy. Zach, I fear that we could have an entirely separate podcast about this one song. All I have to leave it at is that whenever someone says to me that they're not really into Rush, I will sneak attack them when they least expect it with this song.
This song is a masterpiece, and it makes perfect sense that they spend that much time on it. You know, looking at the actual makeup of this song is in itself separated into seven parts, seven chapters, and incredibly, the final chapter is titled "A Farewell to Things,"
right,
which is harkens back to "A Farewell to Kings," the previous album that started this kind of story of Cygnus.
Right.
You know, so it kind of comes full circle.
I remember sitting in Zach's room listening to this and trying to wrap my head around what a concept album was. And I was, you know, used to listening to hair metal songs, which, you know, many times were, they were written about drugs, booze, sex, booze. this was my,
you don't like any of those things.
Some of you guys out there right now might be like Jim Carrey at the bar in Dumb and Dumber. I don't care, but you must at least acknowledge the level of intelligence that Zach was saying earlier that Neil Peart has with his songwriting. So the idea of hemispheres, as Zach and I were talking about earlier, it came from a book that Neil was reading at the time called Powers of Mind. It was a book by written by a guy named Adam Smith. And Neil noted that the theme was related to a, what he called, quote, a constant conflict between thoughts and emotions, between your feelings and your rational ideas. So Neil notes that the battle, this battle between both sides of the brain, it's inside each of us. So that's the lesson that I want you guys to get out of today's podcast. It's not some abstract cosmic battle. It's part of our everyday lives. And so much of what we do every day is governed by a thought or a feeling, the rational side and the instinctive side, and what Neil called the battle of heart and mind. You know, in closing, I've talked about it on numerous episodes, podcast episodes, 15, 16, 17 plus episodes that I can recall about my musical taste growing up through the 80s and into the 90s. And then it really morphed and changed. And I really have to limit it to maybe one or two people in my life that helped that with that change. And that was Zach. And I think a lot of that stemmed from his brother as well. So shout out to Jason Stoff, if you're listening. It was just an experience that I'll never forget. And when I do go back to your house, Zach, Zach's parents still own the house that he grew up in. I find myself being conflicted with going back up into your room as much as I want to, and I want to run up those stairs. I have to be honest, sometimes I get a little sad because I miss those times. But overall, here we are today, both married with kids, and we're still talking about this. And other than my love for the Red Sox, I can't think of anything else besides our friendship that I've had practically my entire life. And so I get really emotional when I think about Rush. And now knowing that, you know, Neil is gone and they're never going to play again, I have respect to the fact that they're not like, yeah, let's find a replacement and go out on tour, which I'm sure they thought about, but then they were like, no, what are we doing? But it's just, it's brought such a warm feeling to my life. And if you're not a Rush fan and you go and listen to this album, and maybe it's not for you, check out their other 18 albums because they're all so different. And I think it's important to mention that when Zach and I were talking a few weeks ago about what album to review, we were like, well, geez, there's just so many different ones. And it's not like one band kind of putting out the same sound. There are so many different sounds that this band produces in their albums. And I think, Zach, correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason that we chose Hemispheres was it was It wasn't when they kind of broke. I would say 2112 was maybe the one that sort of, if you ever watch a Rush documentary, they'll say that was the album where the record company stopped giving them crap and saying, okay, go do what you want. Hemispheres was really the peak. Everything after that, it was still incredibly difficult and challenging and technically strong. But this was, like I was saying earlier, the album where they kind of plateaued and they were like, this is too hard. We can't, you know, do this again. We're going to need to play these songs live. And I think that was a big reason why they didn't play some of those songs for 15, 20, 25 years. So, but I had to mention that because my love for this band really roots from Zach and Jay, I just get a lot of great memories and warm feelings when I go back and think about it.
Well, thanks for saying all that, man. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to come across to the listeners out there, you know, our friendship and past, you know, listening to this record and, you know, so many amazing memories we have, with it, and, you know, we're keeping it going. I mean, this album, getting back into it has inspired me to go out and buy a Rickenbacker again.
Awesome.
You know, I miss my cherry sunburst Rickenbacker. Cause,
awesome.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's, you know, it's a special thing, you know, having these songs in this band that provide the soundtrack to so many of our memories and childhood and
for 35 plus years, you know.
Yeah. And lives, just as musicians being inspired, where would we be today if we hadn't decided to pursue music so much in our life? And it's a really special thing. And we were talking about, just to add on to what you said, you know, maybe as a little precursor to a second part of this, maybe talking about an album that we have more direct experience with, you know, that we went out and actually saw on tour and stuff later in our life, you know, because it's one thing to go back and get introduced to a band from their classic albums. And it's another thing to look at the albums that came out when you were really into them. That would be a nice contrast for sure. But thanks for acknowledging all that. And I'm glad we're still here in our mid-40s talking about Rush and playing these songs to our kids.
Absolutely, man. Well, thanks so much for joining me again, Zach. And we will do another review soon. Thank you guys for listening. I've just had a great time doing this. And hopefully, I don't care if I scared anybody off. I love it. So take care, guys.
Thank you again for listening to the albumreview.net podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Zach Stoff and our album review of Rush's 1978 absolute masterpiece, Hemispheres. I hope we didn't geek out too much on this one. And if we did, well, tough. This band holds a special place in my heart. Remember, if you're interested in any of the albums I've discussed in this episode or previous episodes, go to albumreview.net and pick up a copy of your own. Listen to all of my podcast episodes and album reviews at albumreview.net by clicking on the podcast tab. They can also be heard wherever podcasts are available. Lastly, I do want to hear from you. Please email me your feedback, your album review requests, and any questions that you might have to gpotters@albumreview.net. That's gpotters@albumreview.net. Stay tuned for updates on Instagram and Facebook. You can find me at albumreview.net. Join the mailing list, which is on the homepage of my website, or just keep refreshing your podcast. Just read and listen. Thanks again, guys. Keep on listening, keep on reading, and keep on learning. Happy 2022. Now go get your shine box.
Take a trip down by the highway. 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 Take a trip down by my highway.